payments to schools did go out on time. I'm assured were received in the were wired to the accounts of the school districts of the state, the $156 million, on time on the 1st of February. Any school district not in receipt of that money, please call immediately. Well, but I'm told it should have happened in every case by now. And I want to compliment the General Assembly on a very vigorous first half of its session, just as last year's assembly was the most active in memory and transacted more business on behalf of the people of Indiana than we've seen in a very long time. I think this short session has a good prospect of being remembered in a similar way compared to its predecessors. Brevity's good, right? I mean,
one thing that hasn't gone through yet is the tax flexibility proposal for cities and towns. And Senator Garvin said the other day he has doubts that that would ever get through the House. Are you giving up on that?
No, I think it has a lot of support in the Senate, and I think it's an essential part of a long-term solution. We can't move away from property taxes if local government has nothing to move to. And so I know there are people who favor different approaches, and I happen to favor a little bit of all of them, I think. But no, I definitely want to support Senator Kenley and others who know that this is a good idea, and let's keep talking about it, try to move it.
Senator Kenley said this week, though, that if the House isn't going to act on it, that he's not going to keep putting senators in the position of having to vote on what can be construed as tax increases over and over and over for nothing. So it sounds like the work to do is in the House.
Well, I defend any senator of either party against the idea that this is a tax increase. This is an important reform to give more local control to local government and to get some of the burden off the property taxpayer. So I think that would be a misconstruction, and I don't think any senator ought to, who knows it's a good idea, ought to feel the least bit of reservation about voting for it. But I understand Luke's concern about the tactics, that time is scarce, and I know he doesn't want to use it for no purpose, but I haven't given up, and I hope he won't.
Are you disappointed in the failure of the appointed superintendent bill? And will you try to resurrect that, especially in light of the slowing reading diametrically opposed to you this week on the ISAP issue?
Well, the two have nothing to do with each other. Sue Ellen supports this and has for a long time, so we agree on the appointed superintendent. I'm more interested than anything else. This was in the party platform of both parties. And the last, the candidate who ran against Sue Ellen went so far as to say she'd quit if she got the job, so that that a governor could appoint the position. So it's very interesting to me. This seemed to be something with the most unanimity and the least controversy of all, but I still think it's a good idea, but it's not high among the priorities. I've never listed it among my priorities for this session.
Governor, the toll road plan obviously is your top priority. But going forward for the rest of the session, what do you consider your really must-pass bills?
Major moves. Well, I want to see real progress made to move dollars to the classroom, and that's progressing well past the Senate. So I plan to spend a considerably more time on that. Local government modernization, which has multiple pieces. Telecommunications reform, I guess I would add to that list. And I think each of these bills may be changing and I think improving. That's what the process is supposed to do. But all of them at this point look to me to be making good progress, and I just hope to see them all cross the finish line.
Could you talk a little more about the local government modernization? Because the 1400, which had, I think, most of what you wanted in it, didn't even get a hearing. And the other bills that are moving do not eliminate township assessors. And, in fact, of all the things that you've tried to do in the legislature, it seems the one that they are most resistant to is cutting government.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just at the halfway point, and what I can tell you is that each element that we ask them to look at is progressing in one fashion or another. And it's only rarely that you get 100% of anything you ask for, let alone a very large and multi-part proposal like that one. But viewed in the half-full way that I prefer to, the legislature is seriously engaged with this issue now, and that alone is progress, and I'm hopeful that we'll see some real tangible outcomes here. We won't be done with this issue even if everything I suggested passes. There's so much more to look at, however far they get in 2006.
What about the cigarette tax? Are you going to talk to that again?
If anybody sees an opening to do so, I'm more than happy. I did directly and face-to-face ask legislators to vote for this. I urged the committee chairman to go ahead and have a vote, even though it looked like it couldn't pass, just in hopes that something would change. It's a good idea. It's a right thing to do for the health of young people, in particular in this state. I'm going to continue to be for it.
Governor, there's some talk maybe what could happen on the local government issue is that the mayor gets pretty much what he wants, and that serves almost as a pilot program.
Mm-hmm.
Forward.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that idea?
I've always said that I'd like to see the reform be bottom up if possible. And that's why I've supported every chance I could initiatives like Mayor Peterson's. There are less well-developed ideas people are tentatively looking at in a couple other cities, and I'm encouraging them too. And I hope that he gets what he's proposed. And again, I say this without pretending to know that any of these measures will deliver everything that's claimed for them. They might not, but local governments like Mayor Peterson's deserve a chance to reform if they want to, and we'll learn from them as they do, and we can imitate those things that work well and avoid those things that turn out not to work well, but I support him in this.
Governor, two of the three companies bidding for the welfare services eligibility are foreign companies. If one of those gets the award, we're talking about a $1 billion contract,
mm-hmm.
How does that square with your Buy Indiana initiative, especially in light of the criticism the Democratic governors took over the mm-hmm. awarding the contract of the workforce development contract to the Indian company?
First of all, I don't know who's bidding on that contract. I know of a couple of American companies that are, but I take you at your word that there may be others. We have, for the first time, a very aggressive Buy Indiana policy in place in this administration. We weren't even keeping score before last year, and now we are, and the percentage of dollars being won by Indiana firms is going up. Indiana firms are now, for the first time, able to establish their qualification, and then they get an advantage. They still have to deliver value to the taxpayer, but there's an advantage. We make no apologies for it. We've reversed an awful lot of business that used to be out of state. The Indian software project is being done by an Indiana firm today. The call center in Maryland where you used to make your parks reservations, I believe, will soon be relocated in Indiana and so forth. So we're very serious about this. The major moves proposal includes a Buy Indiana stipulation, which I put in the contract myself. So we're going to work on this very hard. Taxpayers come first. But again, remember that what matters most is not the mailing address of the company, but where are the W-2s? I want Hoosiers doing the work and Hoosier suppliers being used wherever possible when state tax dollars are involved. And 100% is neither attainable nor wise. But paying close attention to this and taking advantage whenever we can, consistent with the taxpayer interest, to keep work close to home is something we are dead serious about, and we're making progress.
You said the percentages are going up, the dollars being spent by Indiana. Do you have statistics on that?
Yeah, I get them on a fairly regular basis. Be glad to share them with you. We're up to about 3/4, and it took a while to get to an apples-and-apples comparison, but that's up rather significantly from a time when, you know, no one ever had a policy to push work out of state. No one ever said that, but we weren't paying attention as a state government, and now we do, close attention.
Do you see any role for the Senate passed a bill to privatize BMVs you see any role for privatizing either the current branches or allowing the private sector to maybe increase on the existing ones?
They passed the bill to what?
Allow for the privatization of BMV branches.
Honestly, I didn't know that. I'd take a look at it. We're trying to make service better any way we can. For instance, we are working on making it possible to get your paperwork done at the auto dealer, which you could say is a way to deliver the service through a private means. We used to have a AAA, used to deliver a lot of the motor vehicle service in the state. That was a private provider. We're for whatever gives better customer service, and I would take a look at it. We've had a lot of proposals to reform the BMV, but I don't recognize that one, at least by that description, as ours.
Last night, a bill to restrict government services to illegal aliens
mm-hmm.
die in the House. Do you think that was the right end for that bill?
Yes, I do.
Could you elaborate on why that was the proper outcome?
I don't think I think the bill would have sent a very harsh and unfriendly message to people who, under the proper circumstances, we want to welcome in this state. And I want our state to be a place where people can bring their dreams and their work ethic. And I want our state to be a place with a heart. And I think there were risks that this bill would, even if it not intentionally, would take us in the wrong direction there.
In regards to major moves in I-69, have you given any thought as to that time frame where you might seek bids to privatize the new I-69? Is the intention essentially to get that bid and use that money to build the road, or build the road first and then have...
No. We would move quickly if given permission, and we would be seeking to see if a private company would like to be a partner with the state in building the road. That is part of the solution to the multi-billion dollar transportation deficit that major moves would close. A private partner, if we did choose one, would build and help, would design, build, and operate the road, probably, from what has happened elsewhere, faster than the state could do it, and that matters to us. But it'd be some of their money and some of ours and a lot of federal money. The new highway bill very much encourages doing this, and Indiana would be a leader, if we were to get to this point, in building new interstate highway that way.
So what's the timeline? Start seeing if it's going to happen or not.
A lot of thought has gone into this, and our people have gone to other states and visited with experts. If given permission by the General Assembly, you know me, I'd want to move as fast as we could, and we would try to get a request for proposals together and out quickly. Now, I will say, in this case, where we're talking about a road that doesn't yet exist, I want to make sure we confer carefully with members of the General Assembly, mayors from up and down the route, and others about what could be, what ought to be in that RFP. As always, I want to move as fast as good judgment permits.
Is that this year?
Yeah.
The other states.
Which would mean construction could begin next year?
Hard telling. I assume part of the RFP, what we'd be asking potential bidders. What I want to ask them, among other things, is how fast could you get this road built? I could imagine giving them incentives if they can deliver it at warp speed, whatever that is, and possibly penalties if they were slow. But that, I think, would be one of the terms of the competition.
We heard just sort of general $2 billion benchmark on the Indiana toll road. Do you have a similar mark for I-69?
No, it's a very different situation. We think the ballpark cost is $2 billion. And so one of the problems we're trying to solve is how can we get this thing done? How much private money might come into that. We've never imagined that anybody would build it for us entirely with their own funds. It probably is just too expensive a deal. But how much are they willing to bid, and how fast are they willing to bid it? And a good, healthy competition there might produce a great result, as it did in the auction that we had to be a contractor on the existing road.
In some states, the private companies have built roads nationally and owned them. But in this case, you're saying the state would own I-69?
Absolutely. And I think that's probably the only thing that's legal. The new highway bill very much encourages this. Once again, Indiana's typical, not unique, in having a giant shortfall, big gap between funds and promises or needs. But no, as in the case of Northern Toll Road, we'll own it, we'll always own it. But if they want to build it and operate it under contract, we'll listen.
You have to do quite a lobbying job in the House mm-hmm. on major moves. Do you expect that you're going to have to meet that same intensity in the Senate, or do you think it's smooth sailing now?
I've learned that nothing's easy, even in the case of a fabulous opportunity like this, and so I'm ready to, and I think it's appropriate, of course, to answer every question and visit every legislator and continue to make the case publicly. I have hopes now that because people have had more time to take in what a tremendous boon to our future this could be, that that things will move positively, but it's entirely appropriate that they take time and that they propose improvements, as people in the House did, if they have ideas that no one's thought of yet.
Governor, what do you say to officials in Lake and Porter County who maybe don't feel as special now that Northeast Indiana is also going to get $100 million for their RDA? Do you see there's going to be more of these RDAs, or should they?
Well, listen, bringing this state back economically does, I've been trying to encourage regional thinking wherever possible. That's a very important, it's a separate subject, but it's a very important one. And I think Northwest Indiana should feel that they're in a leadership position now. And I'm sorry if it's the wrong thing to say, but thanks to us, after 30 years of trying, there is one. I would hope that they would not in any way resent other parts of the state wanting to do the same thing. The most important thing for Northwest Indiana is to fund it. We've got the vehicle there, but we don't have any money to really fulfill its potential unless major moves becomes a reality. But I think they should be proud of the leadership position that's been established. And now the next thing is to use that as well as possible to touch off the growth that I keep insisting is in prospect for Northwest Indiana if we do the right things and some bold things.
The Northwest counties had to commit some of their own money to make mm-hmm. the RDA happen, but the eastern counties mm-hmm. don't have to. Is that fair?
I think that's a fair question. I do believe that having skin in the game makes typically for better cooperation. There's nothing that precludes it. I think it would be a very reasonable suggestion to say that those counties that want to have the most benefit from a new RDA ought to have some participation financially.
Governor, the $3.5 billion that come from Paso Robles and the toll roads, yeah. The Democrats, including Representative Bowers, said you've overpromised or overcommitted on the money. Can you talk about that? I know you expect to make a lot of interest on it as well over the 10-year period.
Well, first of all, overpromises is what we found. That's the problem we're trying to solve. More than $2 of promises for every dollar the state had. And that problem sat there for 16 years and nobody solved it. Now we have a solution in hand. The bid was so big that it, from anything we can tell today, pays for every project on the books of the state and leaves a lot of money left over. That's how a new RDA could come into existence. That's how an RDA, the funding of the $100 million for the Northwest, that'll be next year's plan, comes into existence. That's how extra local road money is available. I think that we should be careful and protect a cushion which still remains, certainly for the seven-county trust fund, because for two reasons. Number one, road projects do have a history of costing more when you finally get there than was estimated in the best of faith years ahead of time, and we need to be realistic about that. Secondly, if we all do our jobs together, we'll create all kinds of new needs. We'll think of new economic development programs. In fact, we've got some we're working on now that would require some infrastructure, a new road, a new rail line to create new jobs. And so that's going to be a tremendous asset for the state. So I think for the moment, the bid was so large that we have achieved a unique status among states. We could achieve a unique status among states of being fully funded plus. But I do think we ought to be cautious and realize that we're going to have lots of new needs and opportunities over the years that it takes to build what we now know about.
You said there's a cushion that remains for mm-hmm. the seven toll road counties. I understood from some statistics given to us by Jane that there was $291 million that was unspoken for in that mm-hmm. area, but then they spent $250 million of it on the RDA and the toll freeze. So we really don't have a cushion left for those people to use.
Well, these are all estimates, first of all. Secondly, the bill as written starts at the cushion started at $440 million because the toll road bonds would be paid for by all of the state and not by the Northwest only. So the number to subtract from is $440, at least as the House bill stands. But yes, you're correct. The $150 or $70, something like that, that the House decided, and I support this idea, to share as a dividend with the motorists. Mm-hmm. There wouldn't be another toll road in America in 2016, I guarantee you, where the tolls were exactly the same they'd been in 1985, 30 years before. But the idea that, as opposed to having that as a further trust fund for to build things with, let's use those dollars as a dividend to folks who have lived in those counties and do today, I think was a worthy idea. And there's definitely enough money there to accommodate that and still leave some protection.
So you do not think the Senate should take out that freeze?
I'm sorry, take out?
You do not think the Senate should remove that 10-year freeze from the bill?
No, I don't. I think it's a good idea, and it seems to be the expression of the will of the folks up there. That trust fund for seven counties is a magnificent opportunity. It will allow us to do things for those counties that would not have been imaginable and cannot happen in any other way. And if the people who live there and the folks who represent them want to use a piece of that as a dividend for passenger motorists, I want to support them in doing it. But, we'll listen to what the Senate has to say, but I would absolutely sign a bill with that provision in it.
Can your office provide a new breakdown of where all the money goes? I think we've all gotten a little confused mm-hmm. about where.
Sure. Yeah, we can. Yeah, we can.
And it would be based on the bill this time, right?
I'm sorry.
The breakdown would be based on the bill, right?
Yeah, that's right, because I'm sure, understandably, some things changed here in the last few days, and I've got it in my head, but no reason for anybody else to.
Sense of what this would accomplish. Do you have any plans to go out to the counties and try and sell it?
Sure. I've been out before. I'll go out again. Folks deserve to know what the tremendous upside is here. There are plenty of people that tell them and sometimes deceive them about downsides, but we're only doing this because of the upsides, and they are gigantic. And although I feel that I've repeated them over and over, I know that one has to do that, and I'll be glad to do it more and more. Not to mention that there are going to be years of groundbreakings and ribbon cuttings that will only happen because of this measure. And somebody, I'll bet, will be at those meetings prepared to remind people of that.
Who's trying to deceive them?
Well, let's just say there's been an awful lot of misunderstanding and some disinformation, and that goes with some of these debates. And the good news is, I think that the right is the rightness and the enormity of this opportunity is becoming more clear to people every day, as it did in the House.
Do you have used money from Aiming Higher to sell this? Are you going to be using campaign funds to run television ads?
No plans. No plans to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try. My attention might wander.
The Major Moves was such a major effort for the first half of the session. Did it, make it difficult to get politicians to do some of the other things, like ISTEF appointed superintendent, the local government consolidation?
Actually, as I reflected on that and prior to making my opening comment, I'm impressed with how much they got done, even with this. I believe, biggest bill in a generation in front of them. And I think they ought to be commended for it. And I think they made terrific progress, even though this one enormous opportunity and complicated subject was taking up a lot of time.
I've heard it said that, I've heard people say that you used up so much political capital on both Major Moves and Daily Savings Time that you don't have a whole lot left. What do you tell them?
Well, it doesn't seem to be preventing us from making progress. See, I've always had a different view of this so-called political capital question. One is that it's a scarce asset, and once it's gone, it's gone. But another is that if you invest it wisely, if you do good things and right things and progressive things, it brings a return, like a good investment does, and you have more to use on the next cause. And that's the way Ronald Reagan looked at it. And I think it all comes down to, do you invest it in something wise, something that's really in the public interest? And if you do and people see that, then they'll your capital is preserved or even grows.
It's interesting that you say that, because earlier this week Representative Biggins said on the floor of the House that one of the problems with getting constituents to buy into the Major Moves plan is that they're so angry with you over so many things that he thinks that's carrying over into being against Major Moves because they are mad about time, mad about B&B branches, mad about other things. I wonder if you feel like that's been a problem.
Well, apparently not. I mean, I'm not disputing with David, but it's the results that matter, and so far the results are here are positive. Frankly, that's the only reason that I would worry about things like approval ratings. We are here to try to do great things for this state. We don't take polls to figure out what we're for, and we don't take or what we're not for. We try to figure out what's right and try to bring our fellow citizens along. I believe if you do what's right, people will figure it out sooner or later. And that's going to be our course here, come what may. Thank you.
Thank you.